Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. MJ-12 came into being just after Roswell, but the factors involved were in play before that. Factor 1. A harvest of souls was to occur on the Earth. The wise and massive souls that sit on the Council of Worlds and administer that part of the universe that includes the Earth decided that the Earth's transformation to be a world only for those in the service to other, those solidly practicing the Golden Rule, would occur during the forthcoming pole shift. This is because 90% of humanity is expected to die during the shift, a time of transformation in any case for the Earth. Where the Earth was expected to have a service to other mindset, the Council polled Earthlings to ensure this was their wish. Factor 2. There were going to be some new rules aliens would have to abide by. This vote resulted in a new set of rules being imposed as the awakening to the alien presence was to be ramped up going into the pole shift. Following the shift, conscious contact with aliens would be allowed for those humans able to deal with that without undue anxiety. The Earth was to become a galactic citizen. But in the meantime, visitations were to be recorded only in the subconscious, so the awakening could be ramped up without increasing fear and anxiety, without increasing attacks against contactees by the religious establishment and others that might be fearing the alien presence. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Prior to Roswell, visitors were not required to record their visits only in the subconscious of humans. As the book The Vedas reports, humans saw their visitors as having all manner of shapes. Thus, levitation, spaceships suddenly appearing or zooming away, lasers, and the ability to disarm humans without touching them." End of the quote from Zeta Talk, The Past, written on February 15, 2002. A second rule was also imposed, and this was the element of doubt, which was to be in place during this awakening period. This was to reduce the fear and anxiety among those having a hard time accepting the alien presence or the concept that man is not alone as an intelligent species. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Element of Doubt. "The rule is and will be for the near future, we keep the issue constantly before the populace with a steadily increasing level of discussion, but always, always with an element of doubt. This element of doubt is necessary during the awakening so your populace does not become unduly alarmed. A faint, a palpitating heart, distractible excitement, arguing with friends and co-workers for a few days, and increasing interest in UFO subjects, none of this is considered a showstopper. What we seek to avoid is the nervous breakdown, the fear in friends and co-workers raised to such a level that they take violent steps against the reporter, or the intensity of fear in the observer that would make them susceptible, incline them toward giving the call to the service to self. For this reason, visitations are currently recorded only in the subconscious." End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Element of Doubt, written July 15, 1995. What's this about fear inclining one toward the service to self? Yell fire in a crowded theater and babies are trampled and people are crushed to death at the entry. All thought of other people stops because fear overwhelms and makes one self-focused. Survival. So, because the vote was officially taken and officially said, the populace wants to be service to other, it was imperative that there would be no increase in service to self-orientation going into the future. So the second factor included two rules being imposed by the Council of Worlds. One rule that contact with humans is to be recorded only in the subconscious, and the second rule that an element of doubt must be maintained in front of the populace. So this is going to make it a little more difficult for aliens to contact those people in power positions around the world. In particular, it was going to make it difficult for the service to self to contact those in power positions around the world. And this leads into the third factor that was present, causing the formation of MJ-12. Factor 3. The U.S., having the largest military in the world, in fact a military equal in strength to all other countries combined, made it a key player during any time of great change. Combine this with the U.S. sticking their nose in everyone else's business around the world, setting up bases in other countries, for instance, and that the U.S. was considered the world's largest economy, in that both aliens operating in the service to others and those operating in the service to self wanted maximum influence over the world during the transformation period, they both wanted to contact the U.S. government, which of necessity meant contacting the U.S. military as they would muster to the fore during any contact attempt. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Roswell. At that time, within the United States, many alien groups wanted a dialogue with the United States government. We chose the United States because of its leadership in the community of nations. The United States was and is sticking its nose into every activity throughout the globe. We knew we could rely on the United States to be the message bearer for any message the alien groups wished to get out. End of quote from Zeta Talk Roswell, written July 15, 1995. At this point, both sides made contact. Desiring to evade the rule about contact only in the subconscious, the service to self aliens made contact just before this rule was imposed. And I quote from Zeta Talk, prior to Roswell, the vote of Earth regarding its future orientation was due, which is why the service to self engaged MJ-12. They were attempting to bypass the rules by making quick contact, an engagement that could then continue after the Earth vote. The incident was one that should have resulted in subconscious contact only. Since this breach had been made, the service to self took advantage of it to press forward, more being recorded in the conscious, as though, since the milk had been spilled, why sop it up? Thus, the Council of Worlds allowed the service to other to likewise make conscious contact during Roswell. It was deemed a fair exchange, and as the military intel was not about to influence the rest of the world, being secretive as they were, this was considered to be a delimited contact. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, MJ-12, written July 15, 1995. A different approach during contact was immediately evident between those aliens in the service to self and those aliens in the service to other. And I quote from Zeta Talk, omnipotent Krill. One of the first aliens in the service to self orientation to contact the United States was a member of the alien race from Orion, who called himself the omnipotent Krill. He had studied human societies, or rather had his lackeys do this study, and concluded that a guttural name that sounded like a growl would most induce fear, thus the concocted name. One should take note that it also sounds similar to the word kill, also not by accident. This alien greatly impressed the military officers who met him, in that he understood their need for order and hierarchy, their concept of command by the most powerful and well-connected, and their willingness in the main to sell out sections of the populace for any gain in power that might arise. As he was firmly in the service to self, they were in effect speaking his language. He was at home. Krill set to work disinforming the military as best suited his ultimate aim. As he wished to conquer them, he told them they were in charge. They bought it. As he wished their cooperation, he told them they would receive technology in exchange. They bought it. After all these years, not much has come from this vaunted meeting with the omnipotent Krill. End of the quote, written July 15, 1995. The good guys, those in the service to other, argued effectively to the Council of Worlds that this was an unfair advantage, as conscious contact had already been established with the U.S. military. The good guys were given the same rights. Their approach was different, however, as they wanted a true and open dialogue with those in the U.S. military. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Roswell, "The United States, as other governments, was not approachable. The block in these matters was the human desire to be in control. Therefore, in order to allow the humans in the United States government to be open to our message, we allowed them to be in control. The plan was to allow ships to crash, ostensibly at the hands of humans. This maximized the feeling of control the human would experience, particularly as the front end of any contact we, unfortunately, had to take was through the military. Once they felt they could harm us, they were willing to parley." End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Roswell, written July 15, 1995. How did the U.S. military and the U.S. government respond to all this attention? Well, if the Council has rules, so does the U.S. government, it seems, and their first rule is that if you can't explain a situation to your citizenry, you affect a cover-up. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "The Roswell movie used dramatic effect in the degree to which Major Marcel showed material to his family, and the cavalier attitude he took toward announcing all this to the public. He knew full well what he had come upon in that field and the impact informing the public would have. UFOs were not unknown to those at the Roswell base, and the heavy hand suppressing chatter had already been felt. He agonized and informed his family furtively. The rancher, Mac Braswell, also is shown as having a virtual tea party when taken into custody by the military regarding his mouth. After some blustering, supposedly, he got bought off with a truck. In fact, he was abused extensively in the many ways that leave no marks, and finally told frankly that he and his family would be killed unless he complied. The truck was less his desire for a bribe than it was the only avenue by which he could get the word out. Why would the military need to buy him off? People appropriately wondered and came to the correct conclusions. Were people silenced via death during the Roswell incident? Yes, and more than the public suspects." End of the quote. Zeta Talk, Roswell, written July 15, 1995. Well, the cover-up was due to the military's perception that the public would panic if told about aliens. Well, it was more than that, because the public would infer that the military could not defend them against the alien presence. And the military wanted that perception that they were top dog and the public could rely on them, their pensions could continue, their rank could continue. They wanted that perception to continue. So, a cover-up. Both alien groups set about trying to impress the U.S. military, to capture their attention. The Service to Self did this by giving MJ-12 spaceships, in effect, their technology, but per the Zetas, this was a non-gift. There was no way that humans would be able to operate the ships, nor examine the technology that made them work. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Crash at Kecksburg. As a result of their early agreement with aliens in the Service to Self, the military got possession of several ships. This is certainly no secret, as Bob Lazar confirmed the rumors. The military has never figured out how to operate the ships they were given, and many deaths have resulted from their attempts. Unlike human vehicles, which have a propulsion system and manual controls, alien ships house a strange device that cannot be examined and mental controls. The device that supports density switching and rapid transport from one part of the universe to another cannot be opened and examined, as it explodes and disintegrates when this is attempted. Of course, the scientist ordered to proceed with such an experiment died instantly. In time, the decision was made to simply use the ships and to stop trying to understand how they worked. The fact that the alien ships required mental control only momentarily stopped the generals who wanted desperately to control such a device. They drilled the smug service-to-self aliens assigned as an escort without end, and returned for more lessons after every abortive attempt. The stories told of furtive observations at Area 51, where wobbly spaceships are seen lifting a few feet off the ground and then flopping back, are true. Eventually, enough control was attained that the ambitious generals would order a field run with the ships, or that the idea was to do more with the ship than simply lift and wobble about. They wanted rapid travel across the skies. They wanted to impress the heck out of everyone they were interested in intimidating. At least they could do that, they reasoned. So the human pilots, selected for their confidence and demonstrated skill, would aim a little higher, a little further, and wham! The crash remains, which might be found anywhere, would be quickly collected by special military teams scrambled with the greatest haste. The most likely excuse would be given to the media and local authorities, and since the crash site is always thoroughly cleansed, countering this story is difficult. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Crash at Kecksburg, written June 15, 1996. Well, the service to other countered with power outage demonstrations. This required an exception to the rules that was granted by the Council of Worlds in order to maintain a balance in the influence the two sides were exerting over MJ-12. And I quote from Zeta Talk, power outages. Following the Roswell incident, the various alien groups in the service to other orientation were displeased with dialogue that had been opened with the U.S. government. They found themselves not only held at arm's length, but also negated, treated as entities one need not worry about. Where Roswell had been staged, several aliens in the service to others sacrificing themselves in the crash so that the military could feel they had the upper hand and thus be amenable to an approach, the aliens now found themselves facing a cocky group who treated them dismissively. At this point in time, MJ-12 had also been approached by the service-to-self aliens, whom they treated with respect, as this group had not presented themselves as crashed ships or dead and injured bodies. In the eyes of MJ-12, who looked on the surface, the service-to-self aliens had their act together. We expressed, through the human translators assigned to us, that our capabilities were in fact superior to the service-to-self aliens they were giving preferential treatment to, but were brushed aside. As the awakening is overseen by the Council of Worlds, this matter was battered about, and eventually the Council granted a spectacle that would not be lost on MJ-12, the intended audience, but would be minimized to the populace at large. Prior to power outages, there were several attempts to impress MJ-12 with less drastic measures. Power outages, after all, affect hospitals, little old ladies tottering to the restroom, and moving traffic. We wish to avoid this. Natural occurrences were affected first, having been announced well ahead of time. Unseasonable temperature variations, so that midwinter would become positively balmy or midsummer chilly. But this impressed no one, and we were only credited with being good weather predictors. Light rays were deflected over broad areas, so that midday became night for a brief but very noticeable time, but as no disruption of activity took place, MJ-12 was unimpressed. Thus, we determined and effectively argued the case before the council to prevent the lights from being turned on. Power outages were not unknown and could be caused by any number of overload or mechanical failure situations. People would buy it on the local level. At a national level, in smoke-filled rooms and the corridors of power, the truth would be passed around and hurriedly suppressed. How do you suppose that MJ-12 came to have so many corporate leaders in its broad membership? They were initiated during the panics. Suppress the press. Issue statements that had no relationship to the facts. Use the bully boardroom and keep each other closely informed. When spreading a broad untruth, close communication and coordination is required. MJ-12 was no longer a clique of the military. It became, for a time, a clique of the establishment. Subsequent to the power outages, which did not sweep without warning over broad areas, we found MJ-12 looking at us with new eyes. They now believed our explanation of the Roswell crashes. Their eyes had been opened. At this point, the power outages were no longer necessary. A major factor in the success of this awakening maneuver was the utter inability of the government to stop the outages. Learning of our schedule, which was announced days ahead of the occurrence, they would arrange every kind of backup. All contingencies failed. Power flow was stilled for the length of time announced, and not so much as a flashlight battery worked. The mechanism used by us involved essentially irradiating the area with a countering force, affecting electron flow above a certain level. Thus, human thought or the winking of fireflies would not be affected, but human technology was at a standstill. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Power Outages, written September 15, 1995. The service to other Zetas also gave MJ-12 a travel service, essentially allowed to use their spaceships to transport their members between meetings or for whatever function they deemed necessary. The Zetas explain why, and I quote from Zeta Talk Agreements. Activities that are in the scope of our present agreement are a travel service, whereby we transport those members of your government to and from meetings on the alien presence, and for any other activities that MJ-12 deems important. In this support, we do not interject our opinions on the use of this travel service. This offer, which we have steadfastly maintained for some decades now, was made so that your government would have an alternative to their association with the Service to Self crowd. Our foresight in the matter has paid off, as your government has recently begun to sever all ties with the Service to Self orientation, and the pace is picking up. This was our fervent hope, and we are elated at this outcome. Another activity we are jointly involved in is an educational program whereby we introduce key members of your government to beings from other worlds, their cultures, and their philosophies. We also introduce them to some citizens who carry Zetan genetics, whom we consider to have joint citizenship because of this, by birthright. We have learned that your government, in the main, just wants to know and not be the last to know. End of the Zeta Talk quote agreements, written July 15, 1995. The structure of MJ-12 moved quickly from the original board of 12 individuals, the basis of Majestic 12, to a setting which evolved over the years to a composite membership in MJ-12 of approximately 2,000 individuals. The Zetas described their agenda, and I quote from Zeta Talk, MJ-12 Agenda. The general public, to the extent they are aware of the existence of MJ-12, and its purported purpose of controlling interaction with extraterrestrials are unclear on additional goals. They hear stories about MJ-12's regular meetings with aliens, desire on the part of the U.S. military to secure alien technology, membership in MJ-12 by select and invited individuals, and suppression of news on all of this by harsh means. Are these the goals of MJ-12? Containment, self-promotion, and suppression? Hardly. Where the scope of activities in the early days of MJ-12 were certainly dominated by an intense desire to determine what the alien agenda was and to come out on top of any arrangements, MJ-12 soon found itself holding a tightly capped bottle that was about to explode. Not only were aliens contacting the citizenry of the world on a regular and increasing basis, the evidence presented by ourselves, the service to other Zetas, on the approach of Planet X for its periodic passage was bearing true, and this translated to an almost mind-boggling responsibility toward the general populace. Where MJ-12 was heavily influenced in its early days by the CIA, which indeed ran drugs and laundered money on the excuse that MJ-12, as a secret organization, needed outside funding, the arm of MJ-12 that has strengthened and become dominant of late had a different focus. Now MJ-12 functions as the secret organization it was intended to be, sparsely funded and the poverty child of the government, truly. In that MJ-12 utilizes the many arms of the government to implement their programs, and in that government employees in the main staff MJ-12, there is no need for independent funding. Seeing that the pole shift was rapidly approaching and was framing out to be the horror we had described during our initial encounters shortly after Roswell, MJ-12 first set out to inform the public via the media, with movies having a cataclysmic overtone. Tidal waves, asteroids, and missiles of death raining down upon cities from space, dust in the air putting the Earth in a death grip of doom, all these were designed to set the populace to thinking about such matters, but always with a theme that their government would and could save them. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, MJ-12 Agenda, written October 15, 2000. I, Nancy, entered an unlimited engagement with MJ-12 in 1994 for reasons that preceded the birth of Zeta Talk in 1995. I found them meeting regularly on Wednesday mornings, what would have been prior to noon on the West Coast. They had two boards, each composed of 20 members, which were called governing boards. The board meeting on Wednesdays was the military intel and the CIA, and this was the board meeting I would be brought into on occasion. A second board, also of 20 members, was more or less civilian, and I was never brought into those meetings. I found MJ-12 operating primarily on closed military bases, supposedly vacant and out of sight of the public, but being used for offices. Meetings would also take place in empty barns or open fields, wherever activity of spaceships would be unlikely to be noted and the public would not be around. I was also taken to a CIA building in the trees, which I presumed to be in Virginia, where a parking structure was in a ravine behind the building and well hidden from sight. They had an ample space in the open there where a spaceship could land. The Zetas explain how MJ-12 has tentacles into the structure of the U.S. government while remaining hidden, and I quote from Zeta Talk, MJ-12 Groups. MJ-12 does not operate in a vacuum, as a standalone, off-the-books agency. MJ-12 is the administrative hub where policy decisions are reached and the center where key contacts with the outside world are maintained. Those in its hierarchy have parallel positions within the federal bureaucracies. The military branches all have intelligence units which are skilled in various degrees at electronic snooping, interrogation techniques, and undercover activities. Individuals from these units are assigned to a stint of duty in MJ-12, just as they are assigned to secret missions, and no more prone to talk about these assignments than those involving any other. You hear about none of it. Both the FBI and CIA have vast pools of information on corporations, individuals, and groups running under the many different charters that can exist in human society. These intelligence agencies have formal arrangements with MJ-12, who has but to ask for this information for it to be delivered pronto. Military installations include many complexes held in abeyance, just in case. Idle facilities in remote areas are ideal for temporary use by active MJ-12 members, who are almost invariably from the military. Should the reader find this astonishing, that federal employees are regularly dealing with MJ-12, yet the public hears at most rumors of this activity, they should bear in mind the following. Intelligence groups and the military in general operate on a need-to-know basis. This rule is in place to prevent covert operations from being carelessly exposed, the enemy from learning of plans, and to a small degree to prevent the public from learning what the government is really up to. Also, when services are performed for MJ-12, these services are not distinguishable from normal, everyday services. The requests don't have MJ-12 stamped in big, bright letters on the front. They come wrapped in commonplace covers and thus raise little suspicion. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, MJ-12 Groups, written April 15, 1996. MJ-12 was aware of the existence of my family as contactees, as shown by a recall of a contact with them when my children were small. We were taken off Earth by the Zetas, a matter which had to be recorded with MJ-12 per their agreement with MJ-12, apparently. My son described this as some kind of customs matter. We had to check out and back onto the planet. The Zetas described this, and I quote, Nancy accompanied her three children during an interview, where having passed the first phase, they were taken to the later phase of the interview process elsewhere in the universe. As was our practice at that time, in accordance with our agreement with MJ-12, they were notified and allowed to monitor the exit and entry. Nancy will tell you the story in her own words. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Customs, written September 15, 1995. And here's my story, a recall of a family camping trip, myself and my three children. And I quote, We'd go for the weekend and set up the tent, and when it was in the spring or the fall, there would hardly be anyone else in the campground. Maybe we'd even have the campground to ourselves. I'd get some firewood and make a fire and cook supper. So I'm trying to think if there was ever a time when we were all camping and we'd settled in for the night, if there was ever a time when I was with my children and there was any kind of an encounter. Well, I think I'm seeing something. It's dark out and I'm at the tent door. I'm seeing two or three of these guys coming up through the shadows, coming up through the dusk toward the tent. They're very, very skinny gray bodies, and it looks like they're walking up a slight incline to where the tent is. The tent door is facing down the incline. Oh, they seem to be in that position like they're leaning forward a little bit, coming up the incline. I think one of them comes into the tent, and he's got his finger to his mouth saying, shh, that kind of thing, like a motion, like don't say anything. I think they put their hands on top of the kids' heads, and this wakes them up, but they're waking up kind of semi-sleepy. They don't wake up with a start. They don't act alarmed. They're doing this shush motion again. They're motioning to come on. We all have our little pajamas on. I don't think it's that cold out because the door to the tent flap is back so we could get the air coming through. We all trip out, sort of single file. One of the guys is leading in front, and then the kids and I after that, and the last two bringing up the rear. We walk down the hill in the direction that they came from, which goes into the woods down into a little clearing. They have a ship that's not a 12-footer, It's more like a 25-footer, the next size up. They seem to have a semicircular seating. It's smooth, so that it's like a curved bench, and it has little rounded places for each individual butt. We sit down, and I feel a motion. Now it feels like we're arriving somewhere. I have that feeling like when a bus breaks, the motion that where you experience something when it's changing. It seems like all three of them are gathered out in this room, like we're going to open the door and go down. One of them reaches over and takes me by the hand, and so we all latch up, and we all walk like so many elephants, trunk to tail, everybody holding hands in a line, tripping along in our pajamas. It's a rocky area and desolate, no streetlights or anything like that. It seems to be a desert area. It's not paved. If anything, it's a little sandy. I don't feel that the ground is full of briars or branches or anything like that. It's more sandy, but there's big rocks behind it, not any mountains, but chunky rocks and sand. Very, very dark. I don't hear any sound of water, any lapping motions or anything like that. Just cool sand, and it's very dark. It doesn't seem to be a moonlit night. I think the instruction is to sit down in the sand. I think there's something coming, a large ship, something with lights on underneath, coming down. We've got our heads turned, and we're looking. It has different colored lights on the bottom, not any one color, maybe more white than anything. I keep wanting to say that people in uniforms come out, but that doesn't make any sense because these people don't wear uniforms. I mean, they've all seemed to have little gray bodies unless they're gray suits, but you can't tell. It almost seems like a tan or moving toward light brownish kind of uniform. Half a dozen people, and they're coming out, sort of two abreast, but not in a formal kind of structure, a little informal. They move around like they're talking to each other. They don't seem to have any kind of gold braid on or anything like that, but maybe some kind of insignia to bespeak officialdom. I even want to say that these are people. There's some kind of people here, Homo sapiens, three or four of them in these uniforms. This is a twist. They're talking to each other, and they seem to have flashlights in their hands, and they're walking over toward us, talking to each other. Not arguing exactly, but talking. Maybe more in a heated manner. They're not passive blobs. Discussing something, possibly arguing, it's hard to tell. One of them says, "Oh, here they are." And the other one says, "So what do we say to them?" And the first one says, "Just follow instructions." One of them says to me, "We're from MJ-12. We were requested to meet with you and explain a few things. This is difficult, and I know it seems odd, but I was told you would understand. We want you to come with us. Don't be alarmed." I'm saying something like, "Oh, it's okay." And they say, "Bring the kids," or something like that. He's motioning to the kids, so now we're all walking toward the larger ship, all sort of in a clump instead of hand to hand. We all go up into the large ship. I think it has a moving stairwell. It's enough for one or two people abreast, rather than a ramp or staircase. When we get to the top of the stairwell, there's just a corridor in front of us, white and lit, and we go down that corridor. I turn to the right at the end of that corridor and into a room that has a conference table or something like that. There's half a dozen of these guys in their little gray, skinny bodies, but they look like their bodies are a little thicker. Maybe they're just bigger. Their heads are a little heftier, so they're not as small as the crew that came to get us. Now the conversation has changed from verbal to mental activity. There seems to be a lot of mental charge in the air. We all sit down in chairs at one end of the table, like in a semicircle, the four of us. They're in a semicircle on the other side, maybe six of them, and the Homo sapiens have disappeared. They didn't come in. I'm shifting back in my chair, leaning to the background, to let the kids talk, since that's what they want to do, talk to the kids. There's three little faces looking out across the table. I'm not sure what kind of conversations are going on. Maybe that's because they're not directed at me, but maybe I pick up side perceptions. What do they do with their time? What do they want? What do they miss? He's asking them if they'd like to take a ride in the ship and go see the universe. I don't think anybody knows how to respond, but I hear my son say, "I would." I hear engines humming, that kind of sensation. Somebody comes and says, "Come with me," and we go out the door the way we came in. We go down the corridor the way we came in, but this time we go into another room and sit down in some sort of a chair with a thing that goes over our heads like a helmet, an easy chair kind of thing with a little armrest. Everyone sits down and this thing over our heads, and I seem to black out. We got dropped off right in front of our tent, more or less. It's dead of night. We go back in the tent and crawl in our sleeping bags and settle down. But I do remember there was one time we went camping, and when people asked me what we did, I was hard-pressed to describe what we did over the weekend. We hadn't gone to see horses or gone swimming or climbed around the bluffs. We hadn't done anything in particular. So it was different because normally we would do some sort of activity to break up the weekend, but we didn't seem to have much to say. End of my report. MJ-12 is rumored to harass contactees, commit assassinations in order to maintain the cover-up about the alien presence and Planet X, run drugs into the U.S. to gin up money for their activities, and hand over their citizens to aliens for experimentation. Any of this true? All of it. In large part, this was because the early influence over MJ-12 was from the Service to Self aliens, who gave the impression they had the power to conquer the Earth and the wish to do so. MJ-12 struggled for years trying to understand the different agendas of those in the Service to Other and Service to Self, in part because those in the Service to Self lie with aplomb. Most certainly, they did not explain the rules they were required to operate under. Most certainly, they did not explain that humans are in control during contact and can just say no. I quote from Zeta Talk, "Good or Evil." During the period between Roswell and the present, the alien presence has been variously presented to mankind as evil to good. During the early years, the predominant presentation was evil, intending to enslave mankind and dominate the globe, perhaps eating man as a snack. This trend of reporting the alien presence as evil is based in large part by the perception of MJ-12 that the aliens they were first dealing with were of this mindset. This perception was correct as they were first contacted by the ilk of the omnipotent Krill. The extent of this group, during the time they had influence over MJ-12, ran into many atrocities that the general public is scarcely aware of. However, Nancy, in her engagement with MJ-12, encountered these atrocities and fought to alert MJ-12 that they could just say no, as we have stated. What were these atrocities? We will list a few. It has been reported that street people were picked up and delivered for experiments to evil aliens in underground complexes. This is true, and the experiments horrified those in the military assigned to deliver those hapless souls. These experiments, akin to those used by the Nazi during World War II, were to instill a feeling of hopelessness in the bums picked up on the street, so to drive their souls into the Service to Self orientation. Enslavement, the sense that one cannot resist, the sense that one should align with the strong and turn on the weak, are techniques used to drive souls toward the Service to Self orientation. These experiments include maiming humans so their legs pointed backwards, or they could not stand up straight but must assume humiliating stances. There was no end to the creativity of these Service to Self soldiers, who were specialists in these settings during transformation times. In addition, the CIA, created in the main from the folding Nazi SS, were influenced to abduct and kill babies in the theory that aliens might be inhabiting baby bodies as an infiltration means. These innocent babies, abducted in the 1940s, were killed in horrendously painful ways, the theory being that the aliens inhabiting their bodies would leap out and reveal themselves. As with Satanism, The only accomplishment was that the CIA and military assigned to assist them turned increasingly to the service to self orientation. Thus, even in 1994, when Nancy entered her engagement with MJ-12, some of these actions were still in process. Thus, stories about street people reportedly being taken underground or about evil aliens lurking underground have their basis. Nancy volunteered to meet, for instance, a dino, which did his best to intimidate her. Suffice it to say that she gave him the finger in challenge with no repercussions. She likewise repeated this going into the chambers where street people were maimed, inciting a rebellion among them when she demonstrated "just say no." These chambers are now closed, as MJ-12 realized they likewise could say no. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Good or Evil, written February 15, 2002. Under the auspices of MJ-12, alternatives 1, 2, and 3 occurred. But it was then very much under the influence of the service to self aliens. Here again, the motive was one of elitism, power, the ability to escape the coming cataclysms that will occur during the pole shift and return as kings. As with all service to self associated endeavors, the humans gained nothing, but some of the humans involved may have lost their souls to the service to self orientation. I quote from Zeta Talk, Alternative 3. Alternatives 1, 2, and 3 have been much bandied about as solutions given to humans on how to approach the coming Earth changes. The alien agenda was falsely presented to the humans involved as being a concern for their survival. As the high-level government contacts were strongly in the service to self-orientation, they saw all this as their escape, their alternatives, and were not at any time thinking about humanity in general. What the aliens truly sought was to subvert those humans to sink more and more deeply into the service to self-orientation. To some degree, and with some humans, they succeeded. Alternative 3 is suspected as having been implemented, as alternatives 1 and 2 have been. The United States government underground at Mount Weather and numerous other spots has been documented to the satisfaction of even the most skeptical reader. This fact is not even being denied by the government anymore. Portions of the government, and we are speaking here of rogue CIA officers, set out to trim and prune the Earth's humanity to their liking. Thus we have AIDS and Ebola viruses, as well as various wars and conflicts which the CIA always seems to be at the center of. Likewise, Alternative 3 was implemented, but as the populace can't get up to the surface of other planets, this cannot be demonstrated to the satisfaction of skeptics. Of course, there are clues, such as the tight controls placed over transmissions from probes and the odd malfunction of the Mars probe just as it was about to hit pay dirt. The service to self aliens contacting the government were parked on the surface of planets in your solar system, Mars, the Moon, and a dead planet in orbit opposite your Earth, which you never see as the sun blocks your view. They sent representatives of the U.S. and other governments up to these places to demonstrate that such a living engagement was hospitable. Matters soon went amok, however. Soon the human guests became stressed in the heavy service-to-self environment. Here, far from home, they found themselves watching continuously on a daily basis and with no respite the harsh reality of life in the service-to-self community. Stress diseases cropped up among the humans, ulcers and heart palpitations and arthritic pains. They became distracted in their work, stricken with headaches and vague feelings of weakness. Their human commanders, paranoid about living away from the Earth to begin with, attributed all this to planetary factors such as gravity, air pressure, air composition, or perhaps strange rays that were not measurable on their instruments. The plan was abandoned, and the humans who participated were exterminated. Their bodies were not returned to Earth, nor should one look for this to happen. One should recall that the members of the various governments who were participating were strongly in the service to self-orientation themselves and had no hesitation on eliminating their human volunteers, whom they had so warmly congratulated just weeks before. Those in the service to self-orientation are not noted for being truthful. The moon was one of the planets occupied by humans as a result of the implementation of Alternative 3. As the moon is so close to Earth, so reachable, the alien installations on the moon have been a source of endless fascination by amateur astronomers with telescopes and vivid imaginations. Can humans see these installations? They cannot, as they are on what is termed the dark side of the moon, which never faces the Earth. However, the astronauts landing on the moon correctly noticed traces of activity, a surprise to them, and made comments which were instantaneously broadcast to the rapt audience participating in this historic landing worldwide, the general populace. The astronauts were silenced in the usual manner, and all forthcoming broadcasts have not been live. Do humans reside on the installations on the moon? No. These were abandoned when Alternative 3 was abandoned. We were not involved in the Alternative 3 installations, as we are the service to other Zetas. The two groups do not mix. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Alternative 3, written July 15, 1995. Nor were other promises made by the Service to Self aliens successful, such as the Montauk Project involving time travel, or Project Prometheus, a supposed exchange of citizens for alien technology, or HARP as a source of earthquakes, in fact, disinformation to cover underground installation activities. The Philadelphia experiment, the ability to switch into another dimension, was in fact tried by the U.S. military, but also did not succeed. MJ-12, as an entity, committed suicide when the Bush-Cheney team stole the 2000 election by having the Supreme Court enter the fray, something traditionally the courts have never done. And I quote from Zeta Talk, suicide. Because, over the years, presidents have tried to prevent the incoming president from knowing about and using MJ-12, it has increasingly been cut away from the White House and become an independent arm. MJ-12 has been populated by various civil servants in the intel organizations to some extent, and some individuals who have never had any government service, but who were pulled into MJ-12 service due to their expertise or their positions to help on a particular issue. All of the approximately 2,000 people who entered MJ-12 and became members agreed and signed an agreement to allow MJ-12 to assassinate them should they begin leaking information or financially gaining from information they learned from their MJ-12 association. So it wasn't a large group, and the governing board of 40 was certainly not a large group, but the governing board in particular was very independent. The president could not pull their strings. The vice president was made a member of MJ-12, but not a member of the governing board. Because of the distress the governing boards of MJ-12 felt over what they were certain were plans to misuse the Zeta Travel Service, they disbanded themselves. This happened in December, after the election, and they allowed a 2-week close down. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Suicide, written January 15, 2001. Since both Bush and his father, and Cheney, and the key players on his team were longtime members of MJ-12, they would have the right to the Zeta Travel Service, an unthinkable outcome to those on the governing boards who were familiar with these personalities. They voted to close themselves down, and with that act, the Zetas were no longer in their engagement with MJ-12. I, Nancy, likewise found myself suddenly released from my unlimited engagement. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. Those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.